Hello everyone, and welcome to minute 150 of season 8 of Movie Minute, the daily podcast where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week and finish off the milestone 150th episode, meaning we only have 19 minutes left to this movie, is Mark Hoffmeyer. From Movies, Films, and Freaks, and the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show,
We're
kind
of at the
Mark.
Alamo of our week here. We're almost done. We have one left.
I would think so.
Yeah. We're at the very end.
That's right. That is very true.
Oh, poor Mike.
Yeah. True. So minute 150 begins with Miller and Ryan reloading. And ends with Ryan helping Mike change positions. So we ended things yesterday, as you alluded to, that they started making their retreat back to the Alamo, which, as you pointed out, I think it was yesterday or maybe it was 2 days ago. What's great here is that they've already told us, weeks ago, that this is where the finale of the movie is going to be taking place. They're not going to say, okay, if everything goes wrong, we're going to go to the Alamo and not go to the Alamo. So they're there.
We're here.
That
Billy Bob Thornton was almost cast for Mike? And then Billy Bob Thornton starred in the Alamo?
I still like the John Wayne version better.
I only went and watched it because Patrick Wilson was in it, and he was a St. Pete boy, and I lived in St. Pete. So we had to go support our...
Wait, you're talking about the 2004?
Yeah. Patrick Wilson was in it. And our homeboy from St. Pete, so we had to go support the St. Pete guy.
That's very kind of you. And again, it's an okay movie. It's an okay version. It's just not as epic as the John Wayne version. I mean, John Wayne wanted to make that movie for decades. It was one of the first times that it was... I mean, he directed it. It was his baby,
absolutely,
I guess you can say.
Yeah, the 2004 one was kind of boring.
Exactly. It wasn't it. The one that John Wayne made felt very patriotic. The one from 2004 didn't
kind of
feel that way.
But I kind of like that. Looked at both sides. But yeah, it's just subpar movie.
Yeah, exactly. So Ryan and Miller, reached their position at the end of yesterday's minute, and today we see that they're actually reloading. We recently talked about the fact that at the beginning of the week that they both ran out of ammo, so here they have time to reload. So it's good that they do it, and then they both pick up their guns at the same time and start shooting across the bridge at the Germans that are running after them, killing a few of them, having guys fall into the river, which they have to do that. You can't die in a movie.
Where was their plan? They were like running towards the edge. That's a little... I don't know if I like that scene, but you're right. You just need it for the movie.
That's right. Now, what I find really funny is they both take the exact same amount of time to reload and the exact same amount of time to shoot. Do you think that the M1 that Ryan is using and the Thompson that Miller is using, do you think they hold the same amount of bullets?
No.
And you would be correct.
No, yeah.
Which is why it makes no sense. No, that's why it makes no sense.
Maybe they didn't load the clip as much on one of them.
Could be. I don't know. I mean, Miller, the Thompson can, if it has a clip, it can hold either 20 or 30 rounds. And if it's using a drum, it can hold anywhere between 50 and 100.
No.
But
drum.
He doesn't have a drum here. Here he just has a magazine. So it's either 20 or 30. But the M1,
has eight
bullets. So they take the exact same amount of time to reload and the exact same amount of time to shoot. And we can clearly see that Ryan has shot all of his bullets. Because, first of all, we hear the distinctive ping. That's right.
I mean, one's a semi, right? And one's an automatic?
Yes.
Maybe he just has a fast finger.
Apparently.
Matt, wait, what's his name? Private Fast Fingers Ryan? dumb.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know, no, but he's not. Hanks can just like grab onto that trigger because it's fully automatic, right?
Correct.
But that fires at like that thing can fire what? How many bullets per second can that thing fire? Hank's gun.
Which one?
Yeah.
The Thompson. Depending on which one he has, it's anywhere between 600 and 900 rounds per minute.
So I mean, this is
and taking into consideration that you can possibly have maybe 100 bullets there, which he doesn't. You know, he's got 20 bullets, so you know, it literally will just take 2 or 3 seconds to shoot them off. If he's shooting it on
Yeah, so it's like 25 per like 1 or 2 seconds. Yeah, his fingers aren't that fast. Pop, 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 pop,
yeah. Pop, pop. Exactly. Well, no, an automatic.
No, I'm talking about finger down. Ryan doesn't have. That's not an automatic. Yeah.
No.
That's what I'm saying. The Thompson is you could fully automatic. The other one isn't. So I don't think you could go that fast in 1 or 2 seconds. Could you? Could you fire that?
Probably not. Whatever. I mean, again, we have the ability to know how many seconds it takes it. You know, to shoot. They start shooting at second 3, and they are done by second 8.
Oh, so here, get this. In Saving Private Ryan, Matt Damon's character, Private James Ryan, he has his M1. There's a theoretical firing rate of around 50 rounds per minute. So that's what? 0.83 rounds per second is what they're telling me here? Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever. It looks great. And people fall into the water.
Yeah, it really does.
I host a podcast called Deep Blue Sea, and I love when people fall into water being shot, so it's great.
So you're saying there should be a shark that should come out and eat these guys?
Instead of blowing up the bridge, they have a giant octopus that's defending it.
Was it 20,000?
Yeah, a Kraken comes out.
Come on.
They're running towards the Alamo, and Miller is like, unleash the Kraken! And then it just comes up and eats all the Germans. And they're like, well, we should have done this first. They're like, well, the Kraken's busy. We can't just call the Kraken whenever. And then that's a whole conversation. And then the movie's about 3.5 hours, because then they got to deal with, like, well, what do we do with this creature?
Yeah, it's a problem. Definitely a problem. But a problem for another podcast.
I want to hear the podcast that makes this a problem. That'd be great. Yeah.
So do I. And then Miller, like, basically heaves himself across the sandbags and pulls something back. And we can see, again, it's the wire for the detonation. Now, again, if they plan this out beforehand, why would the wire be on the other side? You'd think that they would have the wire
maybe someone
closely
kicked it
accessible.
And pulled it back.
Maybe. I mean, again, this is reminiscent of the end of the Bridge of the River Kwai. You know, where they have to get the detonator together and stuff like that. And you know, while Miller is doing this, shots ring out, and we see that that either he shot or it's shrapnel.
I think
it's probably shrapnel. Has cut his hand, and then he goes. He still, even though he's injured, he still puts it all together to try to connect. You know, the detonation shows that his perseverance despite being injured. You know, that he's still going to try to
professional.
Makes sense.
That's what you get when you get Tom Hanks.
And then the shot. That's right. That's true. And then the shot changes, and we see Mike and Ryben. You know, and Mike still got the bazooka, and he gets ready to shoot the bazooka, and he shoots another one. He hits the tank again. Sparks fly all over the place, but we see that he really is not doing any damage like beforehand. So again, it seems pretty silly that this is what he's doing, but okay. You know, he's hoping to hit that little spot. You know, that you know, that he knows that there's...
I mean, he nailed that other tank earlier with a perfect shot. So maybe he's thinking he could do it again.
Yeah. Maybe. And then Mike screams, all right, go. And then screams out, we're blowing the bridge. You know, you hear Miller scream that. And he goes, get off, clear the bridge. And then Mike goes, this place. And the two of them get up and they start running towards Ryan and Miller, trying to get out of the way. Ryben leading the way, followed by Mike. And as Mike is running, he passes the rabbit, and then we see that he gets hit in the back. And then he falls backwards, which you'd think, again, he would fall forward from the momentum, but he still falls backwards. And, you know, he falls in a very interesting way on his leg, where he's able to, like, catapult himself back up real easily. You know, I mean, he's a big guy. He does not look like he... Let's put it this way. No. Mike is not the guy who's in shape here. You know, he's still able to rebound pretty easily to get up while holding a bazooka. You know, it's a very spry move. With one-handed spry move. You know, no question
Mike likes snacks, but he's also in great shape.
And then...
Yeah.
That's right. And he likes collecting dirt.
That's weighing him down. No, I don't think he has that at that time, but...
I actually wonder where the dirt is. You never know. And he keeps running, and then we see he gets shot in the torso from behind, but it comes out from you know, from the front, and we see him stagger and start falling down as this happens, and then we see that he falls onto Ryben.
Great catch!
You know, he looks way out of it. Great catch for sure. And then the shot changes, and we see from the German perspective, you know, that they're still the tank is mowing along with you know, all the German soldiers trying to make it closer, and the firefight gets much more intense. And then Ryben brings Mike over the bridge. Mike is not in good shape here at all. You see that he's definitely been shot, you know. It's taken its toll on what he's doing here, and you know he sets him down not far from where Miller is, and Mike finally decides to put down the bazooka, and we can see where he's been shot, which it's interesting. The place where he's been shot is pretty much the same place where we're gonna see Miller get shot, you know, next week. So that's pretty interesting. I don't know if it's coincidence or not, but you know, when you look at a movie this way and you can see that it's pretty much the exact same spot, I guess. So that's a death spot. You know, if you
a lot get of blood. There's a lot going on in there.
And then Miller, yeah, that's true. And then Miller screams to him and goes, "Mike, Sarge, are you all right?" And he goes, "Yeah, I just got the wind knocked out of me." It's an interesting quote for him to say it that way. You know, do you think he's in denial, or he really doesn't know how badly he's been hit?
I don't think any of those thoughts are in his mind right now. Like, I just think that's a lot to process at that moment and respond in denial or that. It's just, I got the wind knocked out of me. Like, he probably knows he's dead, but it's just more of just, he didn't want to tell somebody, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think it's, like, if he looked at Miller and went, "Miller, I'm dying, hold me," you know, just, that would slow everything down, but I think, it's got the wing nut on me. I'm cool. So then Miller can go about his day and keep fighting. That's the way I read it.
Okay. I mean, I look at it and I really think that you know, he doesn't think that he is as damaged as he really is.
Would you know? Would you feel it with all that adrenaline in your body? Yeah, it's true. We don't want to find out.
I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, I looked up the phrase, getting the wind knocked out of you. And it's an idiom that refers to the difficulty of breathing and temporary paralysis of the diaphragm, which is caused by what's known as phrenospasm, which is the reflexive diaphragmic spasm that occurs when sudden force is applied to the upper central region of the abdomen and the solar plexus. This often happens in contact sports, from a forceful blow to the abdomen or by falling on your back. The sensation of being unable to breathe can lead to anxiety, and there may be residual pain from the original blow, but the condition typically clears spontaneously in a minute or two. Victims of such a winding episode often groan in a strained manner until normal breathing resumes. Loosening restrictive garments and flexing the hips and knees can help relieve the symptoms.
Yeah, have you ever had the wind knock out of you?
Absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about here.
I have many times. I used to box.
I don't think so.
And I remember the first time the wind got knocked out of me. The first time I got hit with the most serious body blow, it dropped me. I never felt anything like that before. I only remember a few punches that really did damage, and that's one of them. Because when that hit me, I just dropped. I was like, I didn't even know that was possible to get hit so hard. But I played football and I wrestled, played tennis, soccer. You just catch so many elbows and get the wind knocked out of you so much. It's not fun. I don't recommend it.
Right. But again, I believe that. I mean, again, he's probably been shot in through the lungs, and that's why he's probably having trouble breathing.
That's a good point. No. And he's also been running.
Correct.
He's got to be tired.
I have a feeling that he doesn't realize how damaged he is at this point. That's my impression of this. You know, or again, he's downplaying it because, you know, I don't think he knows he's about to die. You know. And then Miller says to him, well, get out of here. And what's funny is he tells him to get out of here. Where's he supposed to go? They're at the Alamo.
Away from the – I mean, the bridge is about to go boom.
Yeah, but where's he going to go? He's going to find a place to hide. You know?
I think he said take cover. Get out of here, take cover.
No, first he says get out of here, and then he goes
– Yeah.
And then he says take cover. We're going to blow this bridge.
What would you do if instead of bridge, Miller's like, we're going to blow this bitch? What would you have would that have changed the whole dynamic of the movie?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. That's something that sounds more modern than something that would have happened.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, I can hear Vin Diesel say that. Not Captain Miller. Well, again, you got Han Solo saying, let's blow this thing and get the hell out of here. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but
blow this thing, get the hell out of here.
But that happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it's not modern.
From you're right. If he said, "Let's blow this bitch,"
I can't imagine Han Solo saying that either. Blow this bitch and get No, I don't think so.
Good chapter. Not a lot to explore.
No. And then Ryan. Gets over to Mike and lifts him up, and the two of them start to move to a different position, and that is how this minute ends. As you said, not a lot to explore, but some really powerful moments.
Yeah, you know, we know Mike's dead.
He's not dead yet. He'll probably be dead next week. But
you know that, like, you when you see that bullet going through, you're like,
right.
Yeah.
No, but I think what's more telling to me about Mike is the facial expression at the end here of Tom Sizemore. You know that he, you know, he's had it. That's it. There's not much that he can still do here at this point.
Good point.
And I think that's the key for the whole thing. Again, a lot of people have said, you know, things about Tom Sizemore over the years and stuff like that. He was in a lot of crappy movies, but you know, he did some solid work in some movies. I mean, you mentioned we mentioned at the beginning of the week all the different whole bunch of movies that he's been in, and this is a perfect example of that. He's great in this movie. You know,
you don't act with the movies that he did and not be highly respected. I mean, this guy had big roles in big movies, and he had his demons for sure.
For sure.
But I mean, this guy, Tom Sizemore, I mean, we're talking Oliver Stone. We're talking Spielberg, Tony Scott.
Ridley Scott.
Michael Mann.
That's right.
I mean, this guy, I mean, Catherine Bigelow, the guy. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
actually, he acted for Bigelow twice.
That's right. He was in Point Break, and he was also he was in Blue Steel, and he was also in
Strange Days.
There you go. That's right. Yeah. So you see, He's in three movies with her, at least.
I mean, yeah. Scorsese, he's in, like, Oliver Stone a couple times. Like, people, what he brought to the screen is so authentic. He has such, there's so much authenticity to him when he's on there. You believe that he could do whatever. Yeah.
That's right. And again, I mean, Tony Scott even brought him back, you know, in movies as a cameo. So that says something about it also.
Oh, Michael Bay loved him. He's Devil in a Blue Dress. Like, he's in some great movies.
Yeah, he even had a small part in Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, he's the mechanic.
Mechanic. That's right. The plane mechanic. Yeah. All right. So, Mark, have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Just, I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. I appreciate that. Is there anything else you want to say about the movie in general?
I love it. I'm so happy to revisit it and research it and have it back on my radar and get my heart torn out again.
All right. Okay, so every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg directed movies. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I just want to say I don't know how to quantify top best, so I'm just going to say favorite. Okay. So I'm going to start with Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, because if you lived in the 80s, or, you know, a kid in the 80s and 90s, you just, that was just on all the time. And then I'm going to do Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, because I don't know why, but whenever I was at school or summer camps, that was the movie that was played. Those two films were just always on. People were just lazy. They're like, we're going to put those two movies on. That's what we're just going to watch. Number three for me, Saving Private Ryan. Number two, Jurassic Park. And number one, Jaws. It's not the sexiest list. It's not the most, like, I'm not saying, oh, like, I love Catch Me If You Can. I love Minority Report. Bridge of Spies is great. Ready Player One has some great moments. I'm not a big Fablemans fan. AI is good. Like, so many movies, but I mean, I don't know. Just Jurassic Park and Jaws. You know, shark film, creature features are my favorite thing. And Jurassic Park and, like, Return of the Jedi, I think, are a big reason why I love creature features so much. So those are my one and two.
All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that, Mark. All right. Anything else you want to say before we close out the week?
Thank you for working with me. Glad to be back.
Okay. And Mark, why don't you once again tell people where they can find
you? Yeah, you can find me on Bridges. Whatever bridge you go by, I'm there just waiting to blow it up.
Blown bridges or
anything.
Or burning bridges?
Which one?
Burning bridges.
Yeah, I burn a lot of relationships, and I literally and metaphorically.
It was actually a Kelly's Hero reference.
Oh, sorry. but yeah, Movies, Films, and Flicks, the podcast, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. Come listen to us.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Mark, thank you very much for joining me. I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, Ernest,
Scared Stupid.
Of days gone by.